Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Kick it in the guts, Barry. Far away from my
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct
How the hell
answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. And unusually, I have got two interviews today. But before we get on to those, I want to tell you about a film screening at the Kino in Melbourne. It's on Saturday the 18th. You might want to put it in your diary. It's at 4 p.m. and it's a screening of a film called Two Kids a Day. It's raising people's awareness of what's going on in Palestine, in the West Bank. And there will be a Q&A after the film by the director, Mohammed Barbari, and one of the producers. So that's the 18th of April on Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Kino. The two interviews today. First, we're going to talk to Natalie Abbott, who's one of the leads in Rebel Wilson's directorial debut, The Deb, and it takes us into the land of small town Australia, gripped in drought, with the young people looking longingly towards their Deb. And here's my chat with Natalie.
So, Natalie, I know that your background is musical theatre, and you've also done some television work. How did you get roped into The Deb?
Well, it was an audition that just passed my agent's desk, and I had seen the stage play. And obviously, with a history of doing musical theatre and doing some TV, I thought a musical movie is the perfect marriage between the two things that I love most. So I really jumped at the opportunity to try an audition, and I didn't really think that I was going to get it, to be honest. So obviously I'm so happy that I did, and it was such a great experience. I hope it's not the last movie musical that we get to do.
Yeah, yeah. Why didn't you think you'd get it? I would have thought you were
perfect.
I don't
know. I just... well, thank you. I don't know. Maybe I'm not too sure. Maybe I should back myself a little more. But yeah, I just maybe it's a performance defense mechanism to sort of think that you won't get things just in case you don't.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, you'll mulch yourself. You're on camera for an awful long time in the film. It must have been quite an arduous affair for you as a performer. How long was the shoot?
Oh, you're really testing me, because it was a while ago now. I don't remember it being overly long. Like, I feel like it was 8 weeks, which, you know, felt really ambitious, because we had musical numbers as well as, you know, these pretty great scenes as well chucked in there. And I think I remember being like, we're not going to get this done because there's so much to do. And we have some pretty big musical numbers. We've got a lot of incredible ensemble dancers in there as well, and big sort of town sequences. And we got it all done, which was amazing. But yeah, I don't remember it being overly long. We did have a significant pre-production, because we had to do recordings as well. So I think pre, instead of being about 1 week or 2 weeks, I think it was maybe three or four even, and then 8 weeks of shoot, I think.
Yeah, because it's an ensemble cast. How did that all work for you guys?
It was amazing. I remember just having the most fun on set. I'm like, we have some of the best actors and comedians and comedic actors that Australia has to offer in the Deb. And we had some, I hope they don't mind me saying, but some Australian TV royalty icons, veterans in the cast, which, you know, I feel so lucky and privileged to be a part of when I sort of remind myself that I did scenes with Tara Maurice and Shane Jacobson and Rebel Wilson. You know, I kind of go, that's crazy. But then, you know, we also had such an incredible ensemble cast of young and upcoming performers and actors. And that was also so much fun. And also I'm such a Sam Simmons fan, and Sam Simmons was in it, and Steph Tisdall. Like, we had really funny people in the cast as well, which I really appreciate. And I had such a good time learning from everyone that was there.
It's quite an interesting story too, because it brings a lot of the kind of Oklahoma elements to an Australian context. And she, sure. And Rebel Wilson doesn't actually shy away from the Bogan element, does she?
No, she doesn't. And I'm really glad that she doesn't. I'm from a small rural town myself, and I think that that was part of the appeal to me, was the story and kind of where it was set, kind of like a sort of inverted Muriel's Wedding, you know, someone goes to the country to really find who they are, which I love. I love that. I was really sort of struck by the ruralness and the drought and the way that country Australia is portrayed in this, especially the film version, I think really captures it kind of beautifully and teeters that line between authenticity and telling this like beautiful important story and also being a ha-ha funny comedy, which the sort of projects that I feel very drawn to.
The other thing about it that's really interesting is that all the people, even the bullies, are portrayed as real people. I mean, yeah, they've all got backstories, and even though it doesn't spend a lot of time on it, you realise that there's a reason for why they're who they are why they perform in that way.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I really do. I think that people do probably know these people, like either you went to high school with them, or they're your cousin or your sister or your family, or you've heard a story about them. I think that you can probably picture these people in your mind when you're watching the movie. You can go, that person reminds me of that guy or whatever. And I think that that's awesome. And yeah, again, that was probably one of the things that drew me to the project to begin with.
I was pretty impressed with the dance numbers.
Yeah, they're amazing. We had some incredible dancers. Australia's best corporate dancers and musical theatre performers were cast in the Deb. And that is something that is so important. And again, obviously, we want the movie to come out for so many reasons, but one of them is because of how many people it took to make this project. And you know, it's not just the five people who were on the poster, it's so many people who were behind the scenes and who brought these incredible musical numbers to life. I think musical theatre is obviously, you know, I'm a bit biased, but I think it's got such an important place in the world. And to have a movie, an Australian movie, which is rare in and of itself, and then, you know, an Australian musical movie is even more rare, to bring that and to give so many performers a job and a project and an ensemble and a cast, that is, it's so much fun, and we all had so much fun doing it and making it, and I'm so glad that it's finally coming out and people can see it.
Because I don't know very much about how something like this would be made, I mean, I know about how films are made, of course, but how, I mean, all of a sudden everybody just goes into song and dance, right? But it's not actually kooky. It actually works really well. But what I'd like to know is how do you actually perform the song and
the
it's
song
shot?
Live, we do, yeah. So yeah, there was a mix of both. So we did in our pre-production, we did our recording in a booth, which was so much fun for me. I loved that. That was one of my favorite parts of the whole project, was recording. And then as we are filming, we are singing along with our recording in our ears. So there's a mix of live singing that you hear in the film, and there's a mix of our pre-recording vocals as well. So I think I can hear when I'm live, and there's a part of me that goes, oh no, Oh no, it's in the movie, it's in the movie. But I think it also makes it a bit more authentic. It maybe is would be a little bit jarring if out of nowhere you suddenly hear the most auto-tuned version of me come out of a scene or speaking or something, and then all of a sudden I sound like a gorgeous pre-recorded pop star. I think that might be a bit spooky, but the way that they've done it has been amazing, and the sound team and the editors and you know the music supervisors on this are the best in the biz, and it was so much fun. But off what you're saying, I had to really learn as we were going along how this was going to be made, because I've never done anything like this either. And yeah, it was very much a big learning experience.
So you spend a lot of time learning the choreography. You've already done the singing. They do a shoot of the different numbers. There must be a number of cameras, which then gets edited into the piece.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not involved in a lot of the chore. Like the big choreography numbers are probably FML coming out and probably like Wildfire Lit, and I'm in coming out, but I'm on my lawnmower, and then I just kind of like squirve in into the crowd. So I don't know why they didn't get me to put my dancing shoes on in this. They probably said, we'll leave it to the professionals, thank you. But yeah, the big numbers, the dancers and the other cast were learning like crazy in pre-production, as well as doing recording and stuff like that. So we had a rehearsal process as you would sort of a normal musical. So it was, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to it, but it's all very exciting.
Yeah, it is. There is a lot of moving parts, and quite interesting how the different voices calibrate with each other. So a lot of good casting, because the other leads, your voice versus
Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlotte. You're both young female singers, but your quality of voice is quite different. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Charlotte is a recording artist in her own right. Like, she's a singer. So she definitely brings her own flavor, her own style to the songs. And also the way that Megan Washington has like written the score, I feel like it does kind of like expand over a few genres, which is always really exciting to sort of like sink your teeth into. And the sort of new contemporary musical theatre style is something that I really love. And I grew up singing pop and country songs before I started doing musical theatre. So I feel like it has an opportunity to show off a bit of variety in our voices, which is nice. And then we do sound good together. We have a really nice blend, Charlotte and I. So you can see that in the spotlight, which is, I guess, maybe the most traditional, one of the more traditional musical theatre numbers in the show.
What was Rebel Wilson like as a director?
Rebel was so great. She was such a great director. I think a lot of the time, which is probably a good thing, everyone sort of forgot that this is her directorial debut, because she was so amazing at giving direction. And I think that probably is what it's like being directed by an actor as well. Like, she has such an amazing way of giving direction to actors, which I think is really important and fun. And there was always kind of like a sense of spontaneity and fun on set. She's so encouraging with improv and putting your own flair on some lines and stuff like that. And the cast that we had are just so funny. So a lot of the time I really struggle with what's called corpsing, which is breaking character and laughing. And that is not ideal when you're working with such funny people. And so Rebel would be like, please don't laugh at this. He's a trick not to laugh. Do this, please don't laugh, because we're just going to keep rolling and I'm going to keep giving these boys stupid things to say to you, and you just have to not laugh at it. So that was probably the hardest part of my job, is to not laugh at Rebel or Shane or Hal or something. Yeah.
And so when she was directing you, she was telling you what she wants from you.
I mean, I think that like the mark of a good director is not telling you what they want, but sort of giving you the tools or something to get what they need, and so that you get what you want from it. I think an actor comes into a scene sort of with an expectation, and so does a director. And I think a really good director can find a happy medium where they can get what they need from the scene that is going to like aid the story, and it's their job to sort of see the bigger picture and how your performance kind of leads the bigger picture. And an actor is always trying to deliver a scene so that it's like satisfying and makes sense to them and to their character. So I think that Rebel did such a good job giving us both, getting what the movie needs and what the actor craves, I think, as well.
Okay, and were you there when they showed it at the Toronto Film Festival?
Yeah, I was. That was the very first time I saw it.
Oh, go on, tell me the reaction of the audience and yourself.
I mean, it was, to be honest, it was incredibly overwhelming. It was really quite an emotional time. I had just personally been through quite a lot in my life, and the Deb, you know, I think we shot nearly a year prior, so a lot had happened, and watching it for the first time, I was a bit shocked. I was kind of like, that's not how I remember it, or that's different, or I see what they've done there. They've rearranged this, and I hate how I said that, or like, oh my God, why did I do it like that, and why didn't the audience laugh at that bit, and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's such an overwhelming thing. And also, I just walked a red carpet for the first time. I had just arrived in Toronto. I'd never been to Canada before. Like it was incredibly overwhelming. But in saying that, you know, it was also beautiful, and we had such a great time, and it was nice. That was sort of the first time we were all together again since the filming, and how cool that we got to do that. It was so great.
How did the audience react? How did a Canadian audience find such an Australiana film?
Do you know what? I was pretty tunnel vision, but I remember them laughing. I remember them laughing at some things and going like, oh God, they think that's funny. Okay, that's good. I'm glad that they think that that's funny. And I think the response was positive, which was cool. And then we did have a screening a couple of months later in Australia, and I think maybe I was a bit more relaxed, and I think the Australian audience really, really got on board. So it was nice to have it on home soil again.
Hi, I'm Rod Quantock, and you're listening to Fill in the Dots. You know who you're listening to. Why do I have to tell you who you're listening to? You know who you're listening to. You're listening to, yes, Fill in the 3CR Community Radio. You got it right. You've won a giraffe. We're at 8:55 a.m. We're on digital radio and streaming at 3cr.org.au. 3CR has been making trouble since 1976, and occasionally I've been part of the trouble that's been made. It's a vital part of our media landscape, and I'd encourage you to get a hacksaw, an oxyacetylene torch, and go up to the Dandenongs and bring down all those broadcast towers that aren't 3CR's towers, and let's make 3CR the only source of information to an information-starved, dumbed-down Australian community. Written, authorised and spoken by Neil Mitchell.
And you're on 3CR, of course. And that was the inimitable Rod Quantock. And we're now going to go to a conversation that I had with filmmaker Fiona Cochrane, who's just finished a film called Rod Quantock Comedy Warrior, which is going to be screened next Thursday at ACME as part of the Comedy Festival. Okay. Now this is we're talking about your new film, which is going to be showing on the 16th as part of the Comedy Festival. Rod Quantock, a Comedy Warrior. Tell me about how you got onto making this film.
Well, I've known Rod for a long time. I first met Rod probably 30 years ago when he was doing some script editing on a script at the time that I was producing. And I became a firm fan of Rod's and used to go and see all of his comedy shows, shared his politics and loved his comedy. And so somebody suggested that he needed to have an interview made about him a few years ago, and I went, oh, I'd love to do that. And in fact, I'd love to actually make it into a documentary, which I have subsequently done, but it has taken a couple of years to put it all together. Rod and his family couldn't go out a lot in the public with COVID, so we had to wait for COVID periods, and it's been a bit of a protracted production process, but we've finally got it finished.
Yeah, which is great. Just before we get on to the actual film itself, you've been documenting that whole era that that Rod, you know, was a luminary within the Melbourne comedy scene and cultural scene, in fact. You've been documenting this, which is more strength to your arm. It's a great thing that you're doing, really.
Well, yes, I haven't done comedy before, and Rod was the original of the comedians. So, yeah, I haven't touched on the comedy area before, but I have done quite a bit with music and with some photographers and a variety of others with that. Because I think it's and I've still got another film later coming in a similar vein too, because it's an incredibly important period where the Australian arts had been in Australia before then, but they tended to just be follow-ons from British arts forms, whereas, you know, the more independent Australian arts really started in Melbourne in the 70s.
Yeah, where people stood up. And he's, Rod is an absolute quintessential standing up for the and he's, you know, like the show that he did, which was Australia, You're Standing in It.
Yeah, along with a group of people with Australia Standing in It. But, yes, he was the main stand-up person in there, if you can call him that. He did a lot of sitting down at the time, but he was doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah, but it's really the flavour of it. People were really feeling their oats. They were understanding that they belonged in a culture, and they were representative of a culture that was real, and they were... you know, reflecting back on the world, their own, what they were seeing.
Yep. And most of that really started in Melbourne with APG, Pram Factory, you know, with a lot of the theatre actors then, you know, musicians. And as you know, I did Whoopee Blues, which was about the Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band, which then became the start of Circus Oz. So all of those different sort of art forms were all starting, and Rod was alongside. And of course, you know, you have to give many thanks to John Pinder, who was behind many of those things in terms of music and comedy and Last Laugh, etc., starting the Last Laugh off. So they were the early times that started it all off.
Yeah, you know, it was really great to see John Pinder and you giving him the accolades he deserved, because I know that some people have conveniently forgotten how important John Pinder was to this whole flowering. It was really nice to see. And that brings us to the fact that you've got Rod Quantock, who is the focus of this film, of course. But to make this film, you have created and gathered together a whole lot of cultural artefacts. You've got... tell me about the archival stuff that you've got and all that sort of stuff. How did you collect it all together?
Well, unfortunately, you know, Rod was started in a period where there wasn't anybody taping any of his shows. So the very early shows, when he was working with his wife, Mary Keneally, and Stephen Blackburn and Geoffrey Brooks as the sort of main four in all of their early comedy stuff, the Comedy Cafe and other places, there is not really any footage of that. There is a little bit of John Pinder there and some of the Last Laugh that we managed to.
And the trapeze.
And a little bit of the trapeze, yes, with John Pinder when he started that. But there are photos and flyers and all of those. So we put out things asking people for stuff. Rod had some scrapbooks, so we raided anything that Rod had. But we also, for a lot of Rod's early childhood stuff, there was also very few photos. So we made the decision to make some little animations and things that we utilise through the film. Well, particularly through the first half of the film that doesn't have much footage in it. The second half of the film, Rod has had somebody filming quite a few of his shows over the last 20, 30 years. So there was some footage of that that we were able to utilise. And, of course, ABC have various things, including Australia standing in it. So we've, you know, got archival footage from them too.
That's quite amazing, actually. A lot of the, like down to the role of Mary Keneally and the others, and also the fact that he, Rod Quantock, is a man of generous spirit. So it is a communal effort. I mean, it shows his politics effectively. The whole affair, the film itself tells us all about his generous spirit. A lot of the sketches that they have in those TV shows, they really are, a lot of people won't have realised, but many of those characters, like the Tim and Debbie characters and stuff like that, have been carried on as artefacts in other sketch shows.
Yeah, well, they were fantastic and huge. They were really popular in their time and were fantastic. So it will, hopefully younger people can discover some of those older wonderful comedy acts.
And if you want to see the film, then you can go to ACME on the 16th of April and you will find it is there. You can buy a ticket and it starts at 7 p.m. It's the opening of the film. It's a first screening, premiere. And as Fiona goes on to talk about, it is also going to be on at the Castlemaine Documentary Film Festival later in June. There will probably be other showings, but if you want to be in on the premiere, you'll probably catch Rod Quantock at the end and enjoy the immense array of cultural artefacts which are shown in the film, plus spending some time with possibly one of the greatest comedians Australia has ever produced. We're going to go out with a Mick Conway, a version of Rearranging the Deck Chairs on the Titanic, in honour of the work that Rod Quantock has done around the climate emergency. Coming up next is Published or Not.
Our ship is sinking, but please don't panic.
Don't panic!
The band is playing Ride With Me as we go sinking in the cold crew sea. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Changing the weather, changing the sea. Money to burn temporarily. The ice caps are melting, the ozone's thin. Put on your hat and your shades and let's begin. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Our ship is sinking, but please don't panic.
Don't panic!
Things couldn't get much worse, we're gonna die. Women and children first, don't cry. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. First class, second class, third class more. The rich are rich and the rest are poor. You can't stop progress and stay afloat. You can change the curtains, but don't rock the boat. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Our ship is sinking, but please don't panic.
Don't panic!
Let's toast the future, take a sip. Follow the captain down with the ship. Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Alright!
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.